Hi, everyone, and welcome. Along with Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell, and welcome to our Sunday edition of Connections. We begin today with an updated message from Governor Charlie Baker. This would be the day before Patriots Day and the Boston Marathon, and he had a special announcement for Boston area residents regarding Patriots Day tomorrow.
Like so many things that have been forced upon all of us to change or adapt to in the wake of this pandemic, Massachusetts obviously looks a little different this weekend than it normally would. If it was a typical year and it was around this time of year, we'd all be well underway with the final preparations to welcome thousands of runners to the state who would be participating in the Boston Marathon on Patriots Day. This year, while the race will not be taking place on Monday, the sentiment I think we all feel here in Massachusetts on Marathon Monday remains true, and that's that Massachusetts is strong, we are resilient, and we can run any marathon anybody wants us to run. We'll get through this crisis, and we'll get through it together. But it's important that people and runners take the guidance and advice that so many folks in public life, including the mayor of Boston, have put out over the past couple of days and refrain from visiting the start of the race in Hopkinton, the end of the race on Boylston Street, or attempting to run the course. The many men and women that support the Boston Marathon include thousands of local, state, and federal law enforcement, members of the National Guard, and thousands of medical personnel. Those folks are exactly the folks who are currently helping us battle COVID-19, and they need to be able to focus on the work and the task at hand. Do not divert these incredibly critical resources away from the cities and towns that are along this course over the course of this weekend or on Monday.
Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker. On Friday, MSO News Sports aired the entire Congressman Seth Moulton telephone town hall. One of the things that Congressman Moulton talked about was increasing the capacity to test and for contact tracing.
I think that there's a good chance that we will see us get through the peak in the next month or so, and perhaps the virus numbers will go down over the summer if we continue adhering to the procedures and policies that we've put in place. But there's also a great risk that if we reopen the country too early, if we send everybody back to work, send kids back to school, although, I mean, I know the school year is almost over, if we do things like that too quickly, then the virus could have a resurgence. There's also a fear among epidemiologists that the virus could simply have a resurgence in the fall with cold weather, the way that the flu does. We don't know if that's true about this particular virus, but there's a lot of evidence to suggest it might be the case. So what we need to do in the meantime is, first of all, get way more testing. We need to make sure that we know across the board who has this, and therefore and make sure that they can take measures to keep themselves safe and keep their loved ones safe. Part of that is doing this contact tracing effort that the state of Massachusetts is pioneering with Partners in Health, with Dr. Paul Farmer. It's a technique that's been used in many other parts of the world, but has not been used much here in the United States, at least not on this kind of scale. And the way it works is that if you are identified as someone who has this virus, there will be ways through technology that we can trace who you've been in contact with, contact them, and make sure they're quarantining themselves so they don't spread it further. One of the biggest challenges with this new coronavirus is that it spreads so easily, and it spreads asymptomatically. So you might have it, be spreading it to all the people that you meet, but never develop any symptoms yourself. That makes it very hard to stop. So whether or not we can reopen schools in the fall, how soon we can open businesses, it's dependent on the kind of work that we do right now. We've got to continue doing the social distancing effectively so that we can get through the peak. But then we've got to be very careful about how we open up and make sure that we have widespread testing and effective contact tracing in place to curtail the spread of this virus even as we go back to work.
Congressman Seth Moulton, that entire town hall can be heard on a post that was posted here on the website on Friday. We also heard from Lynn Mayor Thomas McGee this week. Now, it was 1 week ago today, Easter Sunday, that Lynn made a few announcements, including announcing a curfew and the idea that residents, when they go into stores in Lynn, they should be wearing face coverings. Mayor Thomas McGee of Lynn.
as we're making these decisions to talk about what people can do to really make a difference, to stay home, go out when it's necessary, go out to the stores by yourself, you don't need to bring your family, wearing facial coverings to ensure that it's another piece in the puzzle of social distancing, you know, so you social distance, but you also prevent the spread if you're non-symptomatic and you don't even know it, which is between 25 and 50% of people that are asymptomatic and don't know that they're carrying the virus. So putting that in context, so when you're making the decisions locally to specifically clarify what essential services are, how do you get food delivered and go to a restaurant, which is clearly what we've identified, those decisions are based on the data that we've received, the scientific data, how the rise of the cases are going, and then the on the ground. I mean, 2.5-3 weeks ago, we were at 7 cases. We're at 671 as of yesterday. As of Friday, we were growing into the 400s, and so we had been working on some decisions on a couple of executive orders that I was working on with my whole team based on the data. And as the numbers continue to rise, it was decision time to really put some pieces in place that would really continue to allow the community to understand the seriousness of this, but more importantly, to have them work with us together to try and together limit the spread of this in the city of Lynn. And those numbers went from the low 400s to 671 as yesterday, and very sadly, 12 people have passed away in our community, and it's a deadly and dangerous situation we're in. But I think the important thing to recognize, and you know, being in Lynn all my life, the city of Lynn and the people that live here, when there's a real crisis or real challenges, and this has been the way Lynn is, people step up, come together, and make good things happen. And I know that us working together and taking the precautionary measures and making sure we do all of the recommendations that are out there from the CDC and DPH on down to the local level.
Lynn Mayor Thomas McGee. Other political leaders we checked in with this week was Beverly State Representative Jerry Parasella. One of the big concerns and big duties that his office has been dealing with in the past several weeks is dealing with the increased number of claims for unemployment.
Folks trying to get their unemployment insurance claims. And, the first week of March, the state had 7,500 people apply for unemployment. And last week, we had over 184,000. So it's just a huge, huge uptick in the amount of folks that have been laid off from their jobs and now trying to get unemployment. I think overall, the state's done a pretty good job of handling that amount of claims. But there are folks who, have had trouble hearing back or trying to file their claims and running into some issues. So we've been doing a lot of work with those folks to try to help them process their claims, because it's really essential to them. People are trying to make their mortgage payments, pay their rent, buy food. I mean, to go from one of the lowest unemployment rates we've had in the history of Massachusetts to now the highest amount of claims in our history, it's just incredible in such a short period of time.
Beverly State Representative Jerry Parasella. Then there's the work being done by the Salem Pantry. The work that they're doing is astounding in both breadth and scope of the work that they are doing. This is Robin Burns, the new executive director for the Salem Pantry.
Is that I actually came on board 3 weeks ago as the executive director, and the first ever full-time executive director of the organization. So we're a really small organization. There's only one other person that works with me full-time, my colleague Samantha. She's the operations manager. And then obviously an amazing group of volunteers and a really active board of directors. So prior to this pandemic, the Salem Pantry had focused on a couple different initiatives. One of them was what we call our mobile markets, or the official name is our Fresh Harvest Mobile Market Pop-Up. And what we have been doing for that program is that we go to two locations, about the equivalent of one location a week, spread out over a month. So we'll go two times to a site called Espacio. It's a space that is run by the North Shore Community Development Corporation, and it's in the Point neighborhood of Salem. We go there two Saturdays a month, and then we also partner with Salem State University to run a mobile pantry there on two Wednesdays a month. So kind of spaced out, it was about the equivalent of one mobile market per week that we would set up. And then In addition to that, we partnered with Salem Public Schools to run what we call our backpack program. And that was done every Friday morning. And the idea was that this was an opportunity for students whose families were in need of extra food to get them through the weekend, would get a discreetly packed bag each Friday that would go home with them over the weekend. And so we partnered with a number of community volunteers, and each person would sponsor a school. And so essentially everyone would meet up, pack a certain number of bags that they would need for their respective school, and then take them off and kind of, again, work with the staff at the school to kind of discreetly get those to the students that were in most need. So prior to again, COVID-19, those were our two core programs. And when I was hired for the role in February, you know, I know that the board of directors of the Salem Pantry have a vision for kind of expanding our services. And we had a lot of tentative plans for what we wanted to focus on once I came on board in late March. And we are trying to kind of plant the seed for much of that growth. But in the meantime, we've been just trying to support the community as best we could during COVID-19. So we've ramped up services in a slightly different way than we had intended, but we're kind of doing what makes the most sense to us at the time, for the time being, and also for our partners and the feedback that we're getting from them.
Robin Burns of the Salem Pantry. Still ahead in our Sunday Connections program, we'll hear what the schools are doing outside of the classroom for learning and athletically. All that just ahead here on Connections, our Sunday edition. But first, here's Rick Moore. Rick?
Thanks, Bill. We started off the week with a COVID-19 update from the city of Salem, where Mayor Kim Driscoll helps to coordinate efforts to help those in the most need.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I'm trying to jot down, you know, a few things a day that help me remember what we want to think about post-COVID, right? Like, this is an interesting thing that would be with us, or for the next time. Hopefully there never is a next time, but you know, there's rules and experiences that can be applied to other, you know, leadership opportunities going forward on different issues. But I think for the most part, most of the to-do lists end up getting changed, modified, and amended throughout the day because you're reacting to a circumstance. So we've got ourselves divided up into teams. There is a really talented group of staff people that work for the city of Salem that I'm privileged, you know, to be able to work with as department heads, and everyone's, you know, sort of got a team that they're responsible for and are working through issues. And here's the goal, here's the objective, here's the value system, now go, right? And they're partnered with nonprofits, with other community partners, businesses and whatnot, to accomplish those goals, whether it's checking in on seniors. We've got a whole group of folks who've called every senior citizen over the age of 70 in Salem to make sure they're aware of resources. We've got another group that's just focused on economic development, recovery and revitalization. What are these programs that currently exist to help with recovery? How are we thinking about revitalization? What can we do to assist? And then the on-the-ground stuff, what's happening with group homes? What's happening with senior care facilities? Do our healthcare professionals need anything? Can we be of assistance there? So there's a lot of balls in the air, but there's some really talented people helping lead these efforts.
That's Salem Mayor Kim Driscoll. Our eagle eye on the Merrimack Valley, Lawrence Eagle Tribune reporter Bill Kirk, gave us the next update, a look at how Methuen and Lawrence may be imposing fines on businesses that are not in compliance with city ordinances.
Yeah, well, the mayor and his administration have been pretty aggressive on this thing, probably because the numbers in Lawrence are so high. I'm not sure. They're getting close to 1,000 cases in Lawrence. I mean, as you might imagine, it's a pretty congested city. You know, it's like the problem they had in New York City where, you know, everybody's sort of jammed in together. But what he's done is there's businesses that they call essential businesses. And these are, you know, convenience stores, grocery stores, any place that, you know, any place that's open, I guess, right now. And what the mayor was concerned about was that people were getting too, you know, were not going along with the 6-foot distance rule. And I don't know if you've been out, but I went to 7-Eleven recently, and they have X's on the floor where you have to keep, you know, 6 feet behind the person in front of you. They've done the same at Shaw's, and they've done something similar at Market Basket. In that case, they put a line. So when you're standing in line, you're always 6 feet away from the person in front of you. So what he's saying is that if these businesses don't, the essential businesses don't comply with this, he's going to have inspectors going around doing spot checks and fighting these businesses, to implement these guidelines or rules or whatever they are. I mean, there's a lot of terminology being thrown around by the state and local government as to what's a directive versus a guideline versus a suggestion. I think, in the end, they're just trying to keep everybody to stay as far apart as possible from each other.
Lawrence Eagle Tribune reporter Bill Kirk. On Thursday, we moved over to Amesbury and Newburyport to see how best to contribute to our neighbor's table with Executive Director Lindsay Haight.
Yeah, I think financial donations are really are most helpful for us and for our peer organizations as well. We can't have the public just coming to our site, dropping off donations. We don't want extra people handling product in uncontrolled environments. And so financial contributions, they can make them right on our website, ourneighborstable.org/give. Whether you're giving to us or any of our peer organizations in the community, that's really the best way for us to help. It gives us the flexibility, whether we have to pay overtime for our staff, buying lunches for our volunteers who are now working 8 to 10 hour shifts, or purchasing food to supplement our food supply chain right now, or just putting gas in our trucks to be able to keep them on the road to pick up food that is available to us.
Our Neighbor's Table Executive Director, Lindsay Haight. On Friday, we got a tutorial on what a face covering is as opposed to a face mask and how much each protects against the coronavirus from Gloucester's Public Health Director, Karen Carroll.
Sure. As you probably know, last Friday, the Gloucester Board of Health had a meeting, and we passed some Board of Health orders regarding COVID-19. And then the mayor's office had some as well. So to go over the highlights of those, again, they're really to restrict activity and exposure is the whole name of the game here at this point in the outbreak when we really are at the peak time in which we expect over the last week and these next immediate weeks coming up will be a peak time for us. So we're being extra careful. We're requiring that people, when they go out in public into essential businesses, they should wear a face covering. That's different than a mask, so we've had a lot of questions about this. A mask is typically what our healthcare providers and first responders use. And they will do, they're fitted to them so that they're really blocking out any type of exposure. A face covering is a scarf or some cloth, a thick barrier that will prevent some exposure. It will prevent things like water droplets that if someone sneezes near you or if you sneeze or cough, it will slow down the transmission of that kind of those types of molecules of the virus. It won't necessarily block airborne particles. I'm sure, you've seen that. That's why these N95 masks are like the gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
So about a week ago, the CDC recommended, and DPH, and then our board took it up as well, that anyone going out into public, into one of the essential businesses, should be wearing a face covering that will at least slow down the transmission. So we have on our website lots of different ways that you can make one. One's as simple as an old T-shirt and some elastic bands. So you don't need to go out and buy. You don't need to be a sewer. You can wrap a scarf around several times. The thicker, the better is what we tell people. Something that you can see through, like a bandana, isn't so great. So the thicker you can put over your face, better. And again, it's to protect both you going into areas where there are other people around, but it's also to protect the workers in our essential businesses.
Gloucester Public Health Director Karen Carroll. We even managed to talk some politics this week. Josh Arnold asked Beth Lindstrom, former Massachusetts Republican senatorial candidate, her opinion on who the Democrats' vice presidential candidate might be.
But I think for Cuomo, I mean, not for nothing, but you don't know. We, again, you and I have been in this business long enough that you never know what's going to happen in politics. And if something happens to Biden for some reason, you know, the Democrats may say, okay, you know, is his number two going to be the most enthusiastic and bring excitement to this race? If they're not feeling that, you know, you never know whether they might, I don't know if they can in their party rules, but, you know, after this pandemic is over, you don't know whether they'll draft Cuomo to, like, take the number one. So we never know what's going to happen, and really they can bend rules because we've seen it in the past, you know, with delegate selection and so forth to fit the purpose. But I agree with you. I think I don't know what's going to happen, especially with Elizabeth Warren. I mean, you saw that she did the final endorsement. I think her timing certainly was too late in the game. But on the other hand, does she bring those progressives to the party? And there's even debate about that after what she did to Sanders with the, you know, statement about you said a woman could never win the presidency. And that really divided the two progressive camps. So you wonder whether even if he does go after Warren as a pit bull and someone who is very smart, you know, on policy, he's just not likable at all. So, you know, there's weighing all those factors about each person. And, you know, would she be that right person to bring that policy part of it? But I kind of doubt it, truly. I think they would be thinking about somebody else who's more likable but has is going to bring more to the table in the flyover states, or someone who's just going to bring a demographic to the table.
That's former Massachusetts Republican senatorial candidate Beth Lindstrom. Bill?
Thanks, Rick. And just ahead, we'll be getting to the educational piece. But to follow up on your point on business, we had a chance this week to check in with Leslie Gould. She is the executive director of the Greater Beverly Chamber. Now, they are right now in the response mode at the chamber, but they're becoming more and more proactive as the days proceed. Again, Leslie Gould from the Beverly Greater Beverly Chamber.
You know, I think the greatest message is to just stay communicative with each other. I think it right now, information sharing is critical. And making sure that the chamber is, you know, communicating with the membership and the business community is communicating with us. I mean, that's really what it is. I can tell you that the first couple of weeks when this all really started to get real, right, you know, the businesses had to close, we had to shelter in place, et cetera. You know, as a chamber of commerce, your goal is to bring people together. So this is the antithesis of that. And then, so it's finding our place. All of us have to find our place, have to find our new normal. We have to figure out, okay, now what's our purpose? So Robin and I, my assistant director, Robin Foster, Robin and I just would, I mean, literally for the first 2 weeks, it's information, information, information. And not only just putting it out there, but how do we put it out there? Every chamber, every organization is doing it a little differently. And we just decided to keep it very straightforward, no frills, no, it doesn't, the email doesn't have to look beautiful, but it has to clearly state the information, because everybody was and still is to some extent getting pummeled with information. And then also the businesses can't get enough of it because they're trying to figure out what they're doing. You know, is it about loans? Now I have HR issues. What are the rules from the city? How am I dealing with my customers? Oh my God, I need to get my product online. How do I make this easier? Now what are my inner operations going to look like? So you can imagine kind of chaos, you know, the first couple of weeks into trying, like, figuring out what are we all doing?
Yeah, not just for the first couple of weeks either, I don't think, here.
No, but I think what's happening, and I think what we're seeing is that at the very least, all right, at the ground level, the businesses are getting more organized. Everybody's, we've got our rules, we've got our regulations. We know, they know what they're trying to accomplish if they can accomplish something. It's curbside pickup. It's, you know, it's a delivery at your home. It's online. You know, people can still order stuff. Etc. So, I mean, there are some businesses that are absolutely, you know, on the brink of closing. There's no question. But then there are other businesses that are actually, you know, thriving and still doing very well. And it's a real interesting dichotomy right now. And from the chamber's point of view, our goal is to make sure that we stay connected, engaged. And as a matter of fact, I've resurrected, if you will, all of our committees this week that were active, maybe not events committees, but certainly, you know, ambassadors, membership, government affairs, power of women. Those are all activated again. And we're going to start organizing. You know, we can't meet in person. Well, guess what? We're going to start meeting online and offering information and places for people to go and to share information. And that's really what the chamber needs to do.
Leslie Gould, Executive Director of the Greater Beverly Chamber. We continue now along on our Sunday Connection show with a look at what the schools are doing. Now, what are the high schools doing for extended classroom learning? That's learning outside of the classroom. This is Marblehead High Principal Dan Bauer.
Right now, you know, we opened up last week the remote learning part of this program, which at the high school level isn't a whole lot different in some regards, except there is, we can actually go forward with new curriculum, although that's a challenge. We have, you know, student support services built in as best we can, and there now is accountability that can take place in terms of, you know, work being evaluated on, you know, satisfactory completion. So we're now in this next phase, but as with everything else, Bill, you know, it's a constant tweaking, you know, getting feedback and looking at how this works. You know, our teachers did a wonderful job putting together this program in a short period of time. And frankly, you know, as much as everything is important to have a rollout with our program, you know, we're trying to balance it with what's happening within our communities and you know, what parents and families, not only of our students, but faculty are facing. So it's a balancing act. But the feedback so far has been, it's been positive, and I just met with our staff today and provided feedback that's been given to us. You know, we know we're going to be making tweaks and adjustments, and I think the big thing for all these plans is flexibility as this whole process evolves.
For Bauer, also a major concern for those seniors, potentially missing out on a lot of activities this spring.
Yeah, I think for the seniors, you know, the number one program we have is our senior internship program, our senior project program. And it's very successful, and I believe out of our 252 seniors, I believe 198, they've already been accepted and have gone through the process of going. And we have lots of students that don't participate because they're taking advanced placement testing, which that's another subject. Mm. But we're trying our best to see if we can hold on to it because, you know, maybe we need to look at that as a virtual model this year to allow some semblance of normalcy for our seniors who they've looked forward to this program for, this is the fourth year. They've seen it from afar. They may have had brothers and sisters doing it, or they know that this is a major, as you say, a cornerstone event for our seniors. So we are working on that because if we can make an adjustment, at least, you know, it may not be perfect, because certainly they can't go to sites and they can't have the physical contact, but if it can be done virtually, then they would move out of their classes into the project. So that's being worked on by my assistant principals right now. And then obviously you have Spirit Week that, you know, takes place right as they're transitioning to go into senior projects. So that may have to be done remotely. And then, you know, we'll see what happens with the other milestone events for Senior Week and all those activities. If we come back, then obviously we have guidelines we would have to work within, but we need to preserve them. But if we don't, then we'll have to be creative and work with our students to figure out ways that we can celebrate and do it some fashion.
Marblehead High School Principal Dan Bauer. And now a quick check-in with some of the area athletic directors. First to the Northeastern Conference, we have Marblehead Athletic Director Greg Siglarski.
Just like everyone else is saying, just kind of, you know, hang in there and wait. I mean, I've told my coaches, you know, just try to stay positive. If kids reach out to you, tell them they keep working out at home, and, you know, anything they can do by themselves individually, just, you know, have them do that. It's too bad. You feel bad for the kids who are, you know, their junior spring. Usually that's a big one for a lacrosse or a tennis, baseball, softball player type thing, whatever they may be doing and trying to move on to the next level. They're going to miss out on this. But at the same time, you know, you got to make sure that we're keeping our community safe and, making sure that we're, you know, we're following the protocols that the state has put in place for us.
Marblehead Athletic Director Greg Saglarsky. We also checked in with Terry Pillsbury, the athletic director at Saugus High School, and after a virtual meeting of Northeastern Conference athletic directors, she shared this.
And we're moving forward with the hopes that we will be able to salvage some semblance of a spring season. We don't necessarily know if that's going to happen. We'll clearly keep the health and safety of our athletes and their families and our people in mind while we move forward. We'll take our direction from Governor Baker, and whatever it is that he indicates to us that we should do is what we'll do, and hopefully we can, you know, hopefully we can do something to safely salvage the spring season.
Saugus High Athletic Director Terry Pillsbury. Much the same story in the Cape Ann League. This is Tom Gallagher, Ipswich High Athletic Director.
So the Cape Ann League Athletic Directors have been meeting virtually, as you mentioned. We've been using Google Hangout, and we've been meeting weekly since this all started. And we've been kind of working behind the scenes on different versions of schedules and taking a look at what information has been released from the MIAA. And at the moment, we have put together a tentative schedule that would bring us back on May 4th, if that date still holds true. And then we also have some other thoughts behind the scenes if that date gets pushed out a little bit further.
Ipswich High School Athletic Director, Tom Gallagher. A couple of reminders for you this week. Don't forget to check out our regular programs here on MSO News Sports. North Shore Sports Night, Monday night at 7. North Shore Today, a daily news podcast, Monday through Friday. The Connection Show, Tuesday and Thursday mornings, live at 10 a.m. with Rick Moore, Josh Arnold, and myself. And we'll also be checking in with the Salem News sports writers and so much more, plus probably the Frankly Speaking Over the Top crowd as well. So we got a busy week ahead of us. Check us out. Tell a friend. MSONewsports.com. Again, along with Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell. Have a great Sunday and a great Patriots Day as well. Stay safe.